I have come today with a joyful message, an easy message. I have come to speak with you about happiness. Everyone desires happiness. It lights your faces when I mention the word happiness. I'll come at the Vedanta through happiness today. When I was a kid, my mum, I guess I was about, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, something like that, maybe 10. I remember it. It was a summer like this, and it was really hot. And then I think it had been quite a quick summer. It had been very cold and rainy, and then it was suddenly very hot. And I was in bed, and my mum was trying to keep me cool with a sheet, fanning the sheet. And then we were having a conversation about it was cold yesterday and hot today. And she said a lovely little thing to me. She said, "He's a fool. When it's hot, he wants it cool. When it's cool, he wants it hot. Always wanting what is not." It must come from somewhere. She'd learnt it from somewhere. I don't know if you've ever heard it. But it was so lovely, and it captured me immediately. I liked it. I asked her to say it again. And then we talked about it for many, many times across the years. It really struck with me. It really did something to me. I thought about it. I thought about it a lot. Now, she meant it literally in context of the weather. But to me, it was obviously not that. It wasn't about the weather. It was about changing circumstance and how it seemed to me that there was a rush of happiness towards something nice and there was a pain of sadness towards something not nice, and it was constantly rising and falling and battling and clanging and clashing. And I thought, he's a fool. When it's like that, he wants it like this. And when it's like this, he wants it like that. And maybe that's part of the reason it's all clashing and clanging and smashing around like this. I thought about it a lot. It meant something to me. When I was at school, I didn't like, it's the World Cup, so forgive me for making this statement, but I don't like football. I never did when I was a kid. It was unusual because all my friends and boys, you know, boys are supposed to like football. I never did. I'm sure some of you here do, so I respect football. But I don't like it. I don't like it. And when I was at school, I noticed this still when I do see the reactions to World Cup games. If your team wins, yes! Such elation, such huge elation. If your team loses, crushing tears. Tears and pain. And I watch that phenomena and I think there's something not right about that. It's not just football. There's something about that which is the pain of humanity. Something happens that's nice. Yes, I'm happy. I want to be like this all the time. Something happens that's not nice. My God, it's all lost. Doom. Something about that. When I was a kid, I didn't think was right. There was something wrong, but I didn't know what it was. My mum didn't know what it was. My football coach didn't know what it was. The kids at school didn't know what it was, because we didn't know. We don't know. We have to find out through maturity, through spiritual inquiry, through spiritual practice, through meditation, through seeking. We have to find out. When I'm seems I have some school analogies. When I was about 12, maybe it happens the same now, when I was around 12, you had to start having career advice at school, in my day anyway. And both my father and my career teacher at school said, "What do you want to be? What do you want to do?" And it troubled me, that question. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't want to be a thing. I didn't want to be a thing or do a thing. So my answer, my genuine, natural childhood answer was, "I want to be happy." That was my answer, and I said it to my parents and to my teacher. "What do you want to do? What do you want to be?" "I want to be happy." And you know, I wasn't really ridiculed, but there was a dismissal of the answer because it didn't fit with the context of the question. But I really meant it. I really, really meant it. That's what I want. I want to be happy. And I looked around me and saw unhappiness often. He's a fool. When it's hot, he wants it cool. When it's cool, he wants it hot. Yeah, my team's won. No, my team's lost. I saw some problem with that. And I thought, I want to be happy. Later on in life, I realized how profound that was. It wasn't just a whim. It wasn't just because I was seeking to avoid problems. It was profound that I wanted to be happy. What that was a pointer to look within and find the natural happiness inside. That's what it was. I didn't know that then, but I know it now. I knew it years later. Similar prompts may have happened in your lives, not quite the same as mine, but similar prompts, similar thoughts or moods or influences may have moved in you as children or young people, where you didn't quite feel that you exactly fitted with the model of how you were supposed to be or what was supposed to be your future. There was some unsettlement about that. It's common in people who come to talks like this. So something in us is calling, something is calling. And then I learned that the Vedanta, the Upanishads, you could say the essence of the Vedanta, says that your nature is happiness. You literally are happiness. That is your nature. So here we are, we have a statement now, a Vedanta statement. Your nature, everyone in the room, I'm speaking to you, your absolute spiritual nature, whether you know it or not, or believe it or not, or see it or not, whether it feels absurd to you or not, is irrelevant. Your actual nature is happiness. This sounds a bit childish, sounds a bit naive, sounds a bit fickle, a bit thin to say such a thing. Depends what we mean by happiness. If your nature is happiness, the obvious question is, why don't I feel happy all the time? And that's because of agitations in the mind. It's not your fault your mind is agitated. Every mind in the world is agitated. If your team wins, yeah. If your team loses, no. Agitation is part of the human experience. The reason you're not happy all the time is because the mind becomes agitated in various ways. And when that happens, happiness is clouded, is veiled, is obscured, is prevented for a time. It's still there, deep, but it's overshadowed by the agitation. This means, when you do something that makes you happy, what's actually happening in that process is that an agitation that was there, or a mood which was there, is being removed. Then your natural happiness shines through. This is a very different way of seeing happiness. A baby, a contented baby, is perhaps a good example. Perhaps this is a good example, it may not be. I think it is. A contented baby becomes agitated and wants milk, because it's hungry. That's an agitation. The mother give the baby milk and contentment. What's happened there is the natural contented shine of the baby, the shining contentment of the baby. It's obscured for a time by agitation. Something happens to remove the agitation, then the natural shining properties of that contented babiness are there again, unobscured. As we become involved in the complexities of life, as we grow and age and have so many responsibilities and things to do and demands upon us, agitations are frequent, regular, long-standing, carry on for years, thematic. Behind it all is happiness. That is what you come back to continuously, is happiness, joy. Not because it's being created again and again and again by a nice thing. Not because that's happening. You may think it's like that, but it isn't. And if you really looked, I have really looked, if you really looked, you'd discover this is absolutely right. Your happiness isn't being created by a nice thing and a nice thing and a nice thing and a nice thing. The happiness isn't in the thing. It seems to be, but it's not. It's not in the thing. The happiness is in the relief of some cloud upon the mind, some desire. You desire something. It's agitating. You're not happy. You want something else. The mind is desirous and clouded by that desire. When that desire is removed, that which has obscured happiness is removed, and that which is naturally there all the time as happiness is unimpeded. This is what's happening. If you see it like this, if you look at life like this, if you persist in doing that, you will definitely discover this is true. Your happiness is not hard to find. You think it is, but it's not. It is there, but other things have come to the forefront and obscured it. Some minds are happier than others. All minds are different. So why are you like you are? Why do you have the mind you have? Why is the style of your thinking or what you want or your moods like it is? Why is life easy for some and difficult for others? Why are you what you are? It's a pretty good question. We can answer it and say that the reason for all that is karma. And I will say something about karma because it's misunderstood commonly. And we can throw some light upon it. To do that, it will be useful to hear something from the Upanishads that will just take us into that conversation.
As a person acts, so he becomes in life. Those who do good become good. Those who do harm become bad. Good deeds make one pure. Bad deeds make one impure. So we are said to be what our desire is. As our desire is, so is our will. As our will is, so are our acts. As we act, so we become. We live in accordance with our deep driving desire. It is this desire at the time of death that determines what our next life is to be. We will come back to earth to work out the satisfaction of that desire.
This is the classical teaching of karma. Put in a very terse, fairly crude way, we can throw some light upon it. Cause and effect. Something happens, it has a reaction, a consequence. When you were born, there was some content in you. When I was born, I didn't know this, you don't know either, there was content in me. I liked my mum telling me about the heat and the cold. I liked the fact that I wanted to be happy. It was strong in me, a driving desire, as the Upanishad said. And it affected my life. Similarly for you. When you were born, there was content in you. You didn't know this. All you knew was how you felt, what you thought, what you wanted, what you didn't like, what you liked. There were parents around you, siblings maybe. There was life around you. Stuff happened, environment happened. It affected you. You reacted to it. You responded. Your life developed. You grew. You had experiences. You wanted this. You didn't want that. You became a character, a personality. You formed your unique self. From what? Not from nothing. From content that was born with you. Content. Any parent, any grandparent who sees a toddler growing up will completely accept the fact that they are different. Why? Why aren't we all exactly the same, like some kind of clone species? We're not the same, are we? We are all different, Why? Because we are born with content. The leaning copper beech tree out there is a unique tree, born from its seed with content. Content in that seed that created the unique characteristics of that tree. Similarly, content in you and in your children, if you have children, and grandchildren, if you have them. Content in them is creating that particular character and that particular personality. So you have been created by that content, and you're living that content out. Where do your thoughts come from? Very hard to say. Where do your particular desires come from? Very difficult to say. You can't tell me. You don't know. You might think you do, but you don't. If you really look deeply, you'll see that you don't know where your thoughts are coming from. They are appearing to you. The way you react, the way you respond to particular circumstances in life, you can change it, you can develop yourself, you can alter certain characteristics. It's not all fixed and stuck. But there's an inherent style about you which you are experiencing as you live this life. From where has it come? The content in the seed, in your DNA, the content of the baby that you were, from where has that content come? Some previous state. We can't really be certain what the previous state is. We call it a previous life. Let's just use that language. Some previous state led to the contents of you as a baby coming into expression. So you have been seeded by a past. So I spoke about karma as a way of throwing some more light on the agitations in the mind. Because you have a mind, you cannot possibly avoid agitations. It's impossible. Your mind is going to respond to the world and is going to be agitated in various ways, either passionately with positive agitation or negatively with destructive agitation or painful agitation. Everyone in the world will always experience movements in the mind. It is inevitable. One of the mistakes in yoga is to try and eliminate all of that and constantly be peaceful. It's impossible. It'll drive you insane trying to do that, and it never works. It's a disservice that yoga has done, in the way that yoga is understood superficially. It's a disservice to try and say to someone, you should always have a peaceful mind. You don't need to have a peaceful mind all the time. It's all right that the mind moves. It's perfectly fine that the mind moves. The mind is bound to move. The point is, how affected are you by those movements? That's the point. How clear to you is it that behind those movements there is something stable, something else, something I can call me, something which is not affected by those movements, some continuity? How clear is that to you or not? Those two things, those two points coming together change life. Happiness is our true nature. Agitations come about as a consequence of karma. They cloud that true nature when they are present. You can't remove the agitations, I have said, not completely. So what can you do? Here comes the big point that I think I've been leading up to. It won't sound big to you, but it's really big. What you can do is you can gain knowledge of the reality of yourself. You can come to understand the reality of yourself. You can come to understand the natural movements that I've been describing, and you can come to have wisdom about that and really perceive that there's a continuity, which we call spirit, to you, which is constant throughout all those things and has been for your whole life. And I'm going to point to that directly shortly, but I think before I do, we'll sing the mantras which are associated with what I'm telling you today.